This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscowane. For many of us, the dinner hour is the toughest part of the day. Work is done, school and practice are perhaps over, everyone's hungry, and they're all looking at you. It's just easier to order a pizza sometimes, and no one's knocking that, but experts say a steady diet of home-cooked meals can be better for our physical and social health. So our guests this hour are going to give us insight into streamlining the planning and preparation of meals, whether for an entire family or the solo diner. Jenny Rosenstock is author of Dinner the Playbook, a 30-day plan for mastering the art of the family meal. Welcome, Jenny.
Hi, how are you, Mary?
Well, thank you. And Joe Yonan is the 2-time James Beard Award-winning food and dining editor of The Washington Post and author of Eat Your Vegetables, Bold Recipes for the Single Cook. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Mary. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So it's so easy for dinner to fall by the wayside. If you're single and you're working late, it's probably tempting to grab some takeout. You know, if you're running around with kids and soccer practice is at 6, which used to be the dinner hour, by the way, it can be tough to make time for it. So let's start by having you sell us on the importance and pleasure of dinner. And Jenny, first to you, you call dinner a love story.
Yeah, I call it a love story. That's the name of my blog because I kind of feel like just, you know, while all of these, everything you just said is 100% legitimate, there is a way to sort of get out of framing dinner as just the worst part of the day, the most stressful part of the day, and that is just to sort of do it. And once, you know, you really don't have a choice. You have to feed your kids dinner, right? So if you do it in a way that makes you feel good and in a way that you like it, then I promise, eventually it becomes something that you love and that you look forward to. And, you know, I realize that's a loaded statement and that it takes a while to get there. But, you know, so many wonderful things can happen at the dinner table. You know, I have kids who are 12 and 10, and they are, you know, they look forward to dinner. And we've been doing this for about, you know, I would say we've all been sitting down together since they were, you know, 3 and 4. And it's really just sort of the point of our day where, you know, we're all busy, and it's the one time of day where we actually sit down and look at each other in the eye and have meaningful conversation and tell stories, and I get a lot out of that. You know, it's a lot of work, and it's stressful, and it's not something I want to do every night, and I don't necessarily do it every night, but I try to do it as often as I can because there's really a lot of dividends that result. So
you really do love dinner. You've kept a diary of everything you've eaten for dinner every night since February of 1998.
Yes, I have. I don't know why I started. I started that diary because I had just gotten married, and family dinner was a command performance in my family that I grew up with. My husband was the same way. We quickly realized that we were not making it happen in the way that we were used to it. It was just always rushed. You know, we were having all those horrible, end of work conversations through email, like, what should we have for dinner? I don't know. No. And we get mad and we have to go shopping. And so yeah, we just decided to streamline it by, you know, doing what other people have figured out, which is to figure out the lineup in the beginning of the week on Sunday, mm-hmm, and shop for everything you need. And then, you know, maybe write down a few ideas beforehand so you know what you want to make. And so the logical place for me to do that somehow became a diary, and I just kept doing it. Mm-hmm. And I just kept doing it and doing it. And before I knew it, it was 2015. So
that's so funny. Well, we're going to get into the how-tos in just a moment. But I wanted to get to Joe. Joe, you write the cooking for one column. I would think it would just be easier to whip together a quick salad or open up a can of tuna after a long day. What does dinner mean to you?
I wrote about cooking for one for a few years for the Post. I'm not writing about it anymore. Okay. Because I'm not cooking for only me anymore, but I still have all of those same tricks and such sympathy for people who are, you know, struggling to think about how to feed themselves. And I think when it comes to single folks, one of the big hurdles is, you know, just realizing that you deserve it, that you actually owe it to yourself to make good food. You know, when I would talk about this and ask single friends what they made for dinner, they would always use the words just and trouble or bother. Mm-hmm. So why would I go to all that trouble for just me? You know, and I always thought that there's no such thing as just you. I mean, maybe it's because I always had a healthy dose of narcissism and I'm the youngest of a large family. And but I always felt like I was worth it. And I've loved cooking for so long that to me, there was nothing more fun than figuring out what I was going to feed myself. And there's actually lots of advantages to cooking for one. You know, that you realize when you're not doing it anymore, such as you don't have anybody else's preferences, allergies, restrictions, you little quirks to take into account. You
can follow
criticisms, right? You can. There actually have been studies about how one of the obstacles to cooking for other people is that criticism, that fact that you're going to face people who aren't happy with what you made. But when you're single, you don't really have to worry about that so much. You know, you can have a craving and you can follow it wherever it might take you, and you can have fun doing it. Now, there's plenty of other obstacles, such as, you know, storage and leftover management. And
yeah, well, we'll get into those. We're definitely going to get into those in this hour. But I was curious, Joe, when you were single, how did you set up your dinner? Did you set the table? Did you eat in front of the TV? How did you work that?
No, you know, I'm not like Judith Jones, who's so wonderful. Judith was most famously known as Julia Child's cookbook editor, and she wrote a beautiful book called The Pleasures of Cooking for One, and she wrote about you know, putting out her nice linens and lighting a candle and setting a place for herself. And I could never quite bring myself to do that. I tended to, you know, eat tacos while I watched American Idol. You know, but that doesn't mean that I didn't savor every bite of those tacos. And I, you know, really appreciated what went into them. And for me, I think it's about really still slowing down and maybe treating it as a bit of a meditation, you know, thinking about your day and enjoying the fact that you're getting to pause for a minute and not necessarily feeling like you need to be answering emails or doing anything like that, but just enjoying your food. Now, yes, sometimes I have the radio on. You know, I'm a big podcast listener to this day when I cook, and sometimes when I eat if I'm by myself. But no, I don't tend to set the whole table.
Yeah, one of the great frustrations of our rapidly moving society is if you do make a dinner, it's often eaten in about 10 minutes and you wonder if anybody's tasted it. Anyway, so Jenny, to you, despite your love for dinner, as a working mom, you said there were nights you'd rather cut your arm off than make dinner. You know, it can create tremendous anxiety. So, first of all, you say you and your husband do share dinner duty. So
yes,
that's something, if you have a partner, you're kind of firm about demanding equal time in the kitchen.
Yes. And I mean, I also say a lot, just to your point about how it can last, you know, 10 minutes and you wonder if anyone's even paying attention. I do kind of try my hardest with this mission to broaden the definition of dinner, to go beyond just the time you're sitting at the table, even though that's obviously the heart of it. But there's so many other things that go into making dinner that, you know, I call it making dinner happen as opposed to just making dinner, which is, you know, just the planning and the preparing of it and the, you know, the cleanup. I have a hard time romanticizing the cleanup. But everything else I really believe in, you know, it's so helpful for, you know, if you don't have a partner or a spouse who can help with the cooking. To me, it's just as helpful when a kid or my husband will, you know, when I ask them what they want to eat for dinner, and at some point in the day, you know, my husband will say, let's have that, you know, that pasta with caramelized onions and spinach. That's so easy. And so he gives me the idea, and, you know, for me, the sink work is the hardest part, and the idea that he's just thinking about dinner goes such a long way in terms of just taking that burden all off of one person, you know, and the kids can do that too. My kids are old enough to do that. And I really find that helps make the cook feel less alone and more motivated to do it the next night.
When you first started this process though, before you got to where you are today, you and your husband, were putting together what you called your lowest common denominator meals. What were they?
Oh man. Well, that's when the kids were young and we were both working full time. And we really wanted to have family dinner. They were they were about, my youngest was three, so I just decided it was, she was ready to sit at the table without, you know, spilling her milk 100 times in 2 minutes and maybe carrying on a conversation. And so we just said, okay, we're going to find, you know, a few meals that everyone can eat. So we just make, we don't want to, you know, before we had kids, we were very adventurous cooks and we, you know, we thought nothing of spending a whole day thinking about dinner. But, you know, obviously with young kids, that's a little harder. And so we really wanted to take some part of dinner back. And that was, we just decided we'll just cook a few meals that everyone eats. And it turns out that that repertoire was very small. It was only, you know, turkey burgers and pasta with butter and, you know, very, as I said, lowest common denominator meals. And it was hard. It's hard to really stay inspired, you know, night after night if that's what you're eating. So we, that kickstarted this whole, you know, we just decided to do a boot camp with dinner.
Yeah, basically it was what your pickiest eater would eat, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it's amazing how, yeah, that you end up just completely giving in to the little terrorist at the table, you know. So
we're going to get into Operation 30 Days, 30 Dinners, but I just wanted to bring Joe into the conversation here. Joe, you're a vegetarian, and as many parents know, vegetables can be the toughest sell for kids. What would your sales pitch be?
Well, you know, if you aren't already roasting vegetables, I'd say that goes a long way usually, and toward helping people realize that they can be better than they may have remembered them, even from when they were a kid or if they're kids. You know, a lot of kids, I don't have kids, but I've spent a lot of time around kids. And, you know, one of the biggest issues that a lot of kids have with vegetables, like even some adults, tends to be about texture. So things are slimy or things are mushy. And roasting helps with that. So Brussels sprouts are a really good example, and I think the last couple of years, people have proven that roasted Brussels sprouts can change the way that people may have thought about Brussels sprouts, and the same goes for vegetables like cauliflower and broccoli. You know, it gives them some nice crispy edges, and they can be still a little tender enough to eat, but not mushy. So that's one thing. The other thing with kids, of course, if you have any garden space at all, if you're able to get your kids into the garden and show them even how a couple of really easy things grow, such as carrots or radishes, greens are certainly very easy to grow. If they see them grow from a seed or from a small seedling, and they've watered them and they've gone out there and harvested them, I guarantee you they're going to be more interested in eating them.
It's all about bringing kids into the process as much as possible. We're going to get into more of that in just a moment here on Radio Times. Dinner is the focus of this hour's show. How to make planning, shopping, and preparation a simpler and even fun. Our guests this hour include Joe Yonan, food and dining editor for The Washington Post, and Jenny Rosenstock, founding editor of the blog Dinner, a Love Story, a book by the same name, and also the author of Dinner, the Playbook. If you'd like to join the conversation, lines are open, 888-477-9499. Our email is radiotimes@whyy.org. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain. And our guests this hour are Jenny Rosenstock, author of Dinner, the Playbook, and Joe Yonan is author of Eat Your Vegetables, Bold Recipes for the Single Cook. We're talking about taking the anxiety out of the nightly question, what's for dinner? Our guests have some great ideas to make home-cooked meals a reality for today's busy families and also for the person who happens to be single. As always, we welcome your calls and comments. 888-477-9499 is the telephone number. Our email address, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at @WHYYRadioTimes. So I'd like to just talk about picky eaters for a little bit more. The home cook has some real competition in heavily marketed so-called kid foods, which are, you know, they're often sweet and full of calories. Cereal, snacks, mac and cheese, chicken tenders, that sort of thing. Barbara Fees, head of the Family Resiliency Center at the University of Illinois, says more parents are reporting that kids are complaining about what's on the dinner table, and parents feel they have to prepare these kid foods to get their children to eat anything. So, Jenny, how did you make the transition from you know, kid meals and the temptation to do that because you're harried and trying to get stuff on the table to something like pasta with roasted butternut squash and smoked paprika.
Well, you know, the thing is about kids' food is it's not all terrible. It's only terrible, or it's only, I shouldn't even use that word, but it's only something you want to avoid if it's the kind that's in the freezer with tons of additives and that you defrost in 30 minutes at 425. You know, there's a chicken finger is not necessarily evil if it's prepared with, you know, good quality chicken and breaded and, you know, and homemade in your own kitchen. It's not, that's how, you know, my kids are obsessed with chicken fingers, and it sort of occurred to me one day that, you know, my mother has been making breaded chicken cutlets for, you know, for me my whole life, and it's not that much different, and it's very easy to prepare. So, you know, we just transitioned the real version of kids' food into the equation, and then you can build from there. We did the same thing with, or you can use those foods to your advantage, like with French fries, you can bake the potatoes instead of fry them. You can make chickpea fries and just call them fries and see what happens. You can build on those love of kids foods, and you know, I mean, there will be kids who obviously are skeptical, but you know, the important thing is ultimately the answer to all these questions is just to sort of expose kids to new things over and over and over again, you know, even though it's going to be fraught with frustration. Mm. But, you know, the only other option is not to. And so, you know, as long as you're regularly introducing new things, it solves itself, you know. The problem is the regularly part. You know, it's hard to just sort of come up with creative ideas constantly. But
Well, tell us about Operation 30 Days, 30 Dinners then.
Okay, well, that happened because of what we were talking about earlier, where our kids were, we decided we really wanted to have a proper sit-down family meal. We were both working full-time, and we just really missed that hour of the day, or the, you know, 3 minutes and 15 seconds of the day where we were sitting down and connecting with each other. And we wanted to enjoy cooking and not just make the lowest common denominator meals like breaded chicken cutlets and turkey burgers and
sure.
pasta with butter. And we decided to just sort of, we were ready for, you know, our kids were at the age where they weren't throwing fits at witching hour, and they could sit down, they could, you know, have a conversation. And we thought, let's go back to all those recipes that we've been earmarking, you know, since we became parents and never tried. And let's get ourselves back into it, you know, let's try to remind ourselves why we love to cook so much. And so we just sort of sat the kids down, and we said, for the next 30 days, we are going to try something new every single night. And here are the rules. You know, you don't have to like everything, but you have to try everything. And that's what we did.
And what was the reaction?
They were totally game for it. What I always find amazing is I'm always so afraid of my children. I'm just afraid they're going to react a certain way. When it's actually, I'm the one that's sort of projecting all these fears. But if you present it in the right way, it can be kind of an adventure. And the truth is, like, out of those 30 meals, they probably only liked, you know, to this day, I think probably about 6 or 7 are still sort of in the rotation. But the idea was less, you know, and I didn't even know this at the time, but in retrospect, it's so obvious. The idea was just training them to come to the table with an open mind. Say, I don't know what's going to be on the table today. So it could be Brussels sprouts, it could be pasta. You know, we try to make one thing on the plate something they liked. But the idea of building that adventure muscle to us became crucial in developing a repertoire, you know, for the last 5 years since that happened.
So where did you get your ideas? These were all ideas you'd had before these dinners?
Well, we love to cook. I've always loved to cook. I was a food editor at Real Simple and a magazine called Cookie for a long time. So I was lucky. I had kind of an archive of you know, great recipes, and I read every food magazine and had lots of cookbooks. So I was constantly clipping things, and I would put them into something called the someday file, you know, when the kids were little, like, oh, someday when I have, you know, a whole afternoon to make a, you know, Bugiali's minestrone, I'll do that. But, you know, it was just sort of this, you know, way in the future when my kids are older, I'll do this. I had no perspective. Mm. So
well,
I decided to...
Oh, go ahead, Jenny.
No, I just decided this is the time. I'm ready. I missed dinner. I want to enjoy it again. I want to enjoy cooking again. And now is the time.
And obviously you chose dinners you could make quickly. Because you were still working full-time at the time?
Full-time.
Okay.
Yeah, so I would walk in the door at around 6:30, between 6:15 and 6:30 every night. So yeah, obviously during the week it was crucial to come up with quick meal plans. And a lot of that, you know, no surprise, involved some think work beforehand. And, you know, half of, more than half of making dinner happen to me happens before dinner hour. It's on the weekend thinking about what you're going to make, maybe even preparing something that can be frozen that you can thaw when you walk in the door. It's making just a homemade vinaigrette. Just that freshens up a salad, and it's the kind of task at 6:30 on a Tuesday night that just kind of makes my heart sink, like, oh God, I got to make a vinaigrette. So I try to eliminate the heart sinkers, on the weekend. And
so planning ahead is key here.
Sure. Okay. Yes, and shopping ahead, definitely shopping ahead and bringing the kids along while you shop so that they can have some idea of what's going to happen.
Okay, so we're going to get back to that in just a moment, but I wanted to go to Joe for a second. As far as making dinner easier, Joe, all sorts of cottage industries seem to have sprung up aimed at the busy parent or worker, like meal kit delivery services. Are you familiar with those?
Of course, yes. Yes, the idea is, you can get things delivered to you that have pre-portioned ingredients, a recipe, and I use the term recipe a little bit loosely in some of these cases because I think, it's just an assembly instruction. But sometimes, you're really cooking, but everything's been pre-measured and even packaged for you. So there's nothing to think about and there's very little waste. And I think a lot of people are proving that there's an interest in this. These are growing businesses and people are appreciating having a lot of the guesswork taken out. For someone like me, it's not quite as appealing because I really enjoy the process of cooking and I enjoy finding recipes and I don't necessarily appreciate maybe a lot of the waste that the packaging waste that results from some of these services.
What sort of packaging waste?
Well, if they're pre-portioned, everything is put in a little separate little package. And so that creates, more trash than I would really like to be creating on a day in, day out basis. But mm-hmm. The trade-off really is that, a lot of people, of course, also don't want to be throwing away half of an onion or the rest of that big bunch of celery that they had to buy to make a dish. And this eliminates that possibility. It's also, it's certainly more expensive too, to go this way than to be buying in bigger quantities and figuring out ways to use all the ingredients. But it's certainly a way to go. I mean, what I really appreciate about what Jenny was saying is, this think work that goes into a successful weeknight dinner plan. And that's certainly what I do, too. I think that if you wait until you're about to get off work and you're what I call hangry, hungry and angry at the same time, and you are just now starting to think about what you might have for dinner and you find some recipe that you don't even really necessarily know the source and you don't have all or maybe any of the ingredients and you go to the store and you're starting from there at the time that you're getting off work, I think you're in trouble. It's going to take you way too long. You're going to get hangrier and hangrier and so are your kids or spouses or boyfriend mm-hmm. or whoever you're cooking for. So I totally agree with Jenny that the way to go is to be thinking about these things on the weekends when you have more time and to set yourself up with what I call building blocks of dishes. So rather than even making, a big pot of chili on the weekend and then freezing it and then eating it over and over again, I like to make a big pot of black beans and a big pot of rice and roast a bunch of vegetables. And then I can store them in various ways. And then I have them to draw from for those quick weeknight meals. I can turn one into a pasta. I can make a chopped salad one night. I can make tacos one night. I can make sandwiches another night. And that way I feel like when I get home, I'm not behind.
So again, the payoff for all the preparation, not only in making building blocks, as you call them, but in thinking about menu items is what you get. You have a great dinner. And it's something that is, satisfying not only on a physical level, but socially, too. And Jenny, let's again bring the kids back into the conversation here, because at the beginning of the show, we talked about how experts say that, home-cooked meals can be good for social health. You bring your kids and you say they have to try at least one bite Correct. Mm-hmm. But you also want them to go shopping with you. And I know, Joe, you had mentioned if the kids are in the garden, that gets them back into the process.
Right.
How, though, you know, again, everybody is so scheduled, kids obviously included. How do you make room for that, Jenny?
Well, to me, it's the most efficient way to do it, because you just take one block of time on the weekend, and then you don't have to do it again for the rest of the week while everyone's, you know, pinballing all over the county at their various activities. But that is the number one obstacle I always hear from parents is time, just not just for shopping, but just in general. It is the thing to get over first. And I always tell people when they ask for advice for starting off, you know, that's what you should focus on first. None of the perfect meal stuff. Like, don't worry about, you know, the society talks about food so much, and we're so obsessed with sort of the perfect meal now that it can be a lot of pressure on parents who already are putting so much pressure on themselves to get things done. So to just sit down first and figure out the nights that work, forget about dinner and what you're cooking for that minute, you know, just figure out Sunday, you know, what your plan can be for the week, where you can all have some time to sit down together. And, you know, I also tell people who are pressed for time to start with Sunday dinner. Just do that once a week, and it's amazing how much you can get out of just that as a weekly ritual.
So, and you also say, you know, if kids are going to help, the bulk of the help comes on the weekend. During the week when they are trying these meals, you say they have to try at least one bite. And one fun thing is you have everybody give the meal a grade, which is not necessarily a reflection on the cook. It's the actual recipe, right?
Funny. Well, that was for the boot camp when we did it when they were little. Now, the only rule related to that is that no one is allowed to criticize the cook. I mean, I'm very interested in hearing that study that Joe was talking about before, how criticism plays a big role in inhibiting people from cooking. Because I always say, if you're not cooking, you are not allowed to say anything but this
right.
is the most delicious thing I have ever tasted. I don't care who you
Thank
are at my
you.
Table, but that's the rule. Like, and if it's horrible, even if the cook knows it's horrible, there was effort, there was love, someone thought about it. You know, spend time thinking about what you are going to sit down to, even if it's not something they want to sit down to. I really try to impress that upon my kids, and I don't want to say I'm 100% successful with that yet, but I work on it.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, let's get to the telephones. Jessica in University City, you're live on Radio Times. Hello, Jessica.
Hi, I am calling to ask your panel what advice they would give to families who have some meat eaters and some vegetarians. And I would also like to say hi to Joe. This is Jessica from D.C. I'm Lucy's mom.
Oh, hey. Nice to hear
you.
Nice to hear your voice.
So, Joe, you want to take a crack at that one?
Well, you know, it's a phenomenon of modern life that a lot of parents feel like they've become short order cooks, right? Because, you know, one person is vegetarian and maybe the husband's paleo and the teenage daughter has decided she's not going to eat meat and all the son wants is pizza. So, yes, it's a huge challenge. And Jenny, I'm sure, can speak to this too. But I would say that, you know, those building block dishes can certainly come in handy because you can try to set up sort of what I would call, you know, the bar idea. So, you know, the roasted sweet potato bar with lots of different toppings. So you can have, you know, all the roasted sweet potatoes out and you've maybe made, you know, you've got some beans and you've got, you know, some condiments and you've got some cheese and you've got maybe some meat for the meat eater and people can top them the way that they want. And that same idea, of course, can happen with pizza and with sandwiches and with tacos and with salads. I mean, even soups, you know, you can do a vegetarian soup base and you can, you know, have some toppings that people can use to customize. I mean, that's one way. There are some books about this out there. I've been really interested in seeing this book that's coming out in the spring by Anna Thomas, who wrote kind of a landmark vegetarian book called Vegetarian Epicure in the 70s or maybe 80s. And she has a book coming out called Vegan Vegetarian Omnivore, which is all about this, how to provide dinner for everybody at the table, with the idea being that you take a dish so far and then you can customize it at the end to help people. I mean, as a vegetarian, I feel a little bit annoyed sometimes that just because someone is a meat eater that they feel like they have to have meat in every bite or with every mm-hmm. dish. And so sometimes I think that, you know, even the meat eaters need to probably be eating less meat, and mm-hmm. and there should be nights when maybe everybody's eating a vegetarian meal.
Thanks, Jessica, for the call. Jenny, do you want to weigh in on that?
I agree with every single thing he just said, and I sort of do the same thing in terms of the salad bar setup and those kinds of meals like the tacos and the soups and even salads. Those are the ones that are most conducive to that kind of eating. But yeah, I have a thing called Deconstructed Dinners on my blog that I write about a lot, which is pretty popular with parents dealing with not just vegetarians but just all kinds of eaters. And those are the kinds of meals where you're just making, you know, your salad, you know, for instance, we have like a chicken Indonesian kind of salad with pineapples and peanuts and cilantro and peppers, and there's tons of ingredients, and they can all sort of be teased out depending on who's eating. So the trick is just to know when to how far to take it, and then stop, and then, you know, figure out whose plate is whose, and then and then continue.
Jenny, what is the art of the kitchen dump?
The art of the kitchen dump is basically right before you go to the market on Sunday, if you're going to shop for the week, you look at your refrigerator and you say, okay, I have all this leftover stuff. What am I going to do with it? So it depends on what you have, but it's just kind of a way to make sure that you're not wasting. As you know, I'm guilty as anyone. I waste too much, but if there's a half a bell pepper left in the crisper, I look at that and I think, you know, maybe I'll cut that into 10 strips and put it in my kid's lunch, but it's just taking going through the fridge with that lens on.
Okay. I'm going to have to stop you there because we're up against a break. 888-477-9499 is the number if you'd like to join the conversation. Preparing dinner is the focus of this hour's Radio Times. We'll have more in just a moment. Stay with us. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain. And our guests this hour are Joe Yonan, food and dining editor for The Washington Post, and author of Eat Your Vegetables, Bold Recipes for the Single Cook. Also, Jenny Rosenstock is founding editor of the blog Dinner, A Love Story, and the author of Dinner, The Playbook. We're talking about taking the anxiety out of the nightly question, what's for dinner? And lines are open at 888-477-9499. Our email address is radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And we were in the refrigerator when we went to the break, Jenny. How do you make leftovers appealing?
I am probably not the best one to answer that question.
Are there no leftovers at your table?
No, they are, but it stumps me. I can always make them appealing to me somehow. But I most of my leftovers end up in the lunchbox. So that's how, and I usually just cook enough for just that. So I on nights when I'm my best self, you know, on weekends, if I make like a big bowl of grains or something, then I'll, you know, pace myself all week. I'll have those as well, but I don't even think that counts as leftovers. That's more like planning ahead. But mm-hmm. but I've never found a way to make it seem like it's not yesterday's dinner. I'm not good at that.
A friend of mine actually does a smorgasbord at the end of the week. She takes everything and puts it out on the table in different dishes. She kind of repackages it, and then the kids get to choose. So
I would think quesadillas would probably be a good idea for that.
Yeah.
We can do that, but I'm interested to hear what Joe has to say about it too.
Okay, Joe, your shot.
Oh boy, you know, I'm a huge fan of the chopped salad, and I use up a lot of leftovers that way. You know, I bulk it up with some fresh new greens and a new dressing and chop things up. The quesadilla is certainly a staple in my household, even without kids too. And I puree things into soups a good amount, you know, if it's mostly vegetables. Now, this is a little bit easier with vegetables, I have to say, than with meats, although the chopped salad would certainly work. You know, I agree with Jenny that it's different when you've focused on these building block ingredients rather than big batches of something, then it's a little bit easier to reinvent things. You know, you can pull those things together in new ways that, you know, that makes it a little bit more appealing. And, you know, for single folks, of course, the leftover thing is even, the stakes are even higher, really, than for others. You know, if you're single and you're looking at recipes that are usually for 4 to 6, then obviously you've got, you know, 3 to 5 meals of leftovers facing you. Whereas even if you're a couple, you know, you really only have one if it's a recipe for 4. So it's even harder. That's why I tend to try to do those building block dishes, but lots of chopped salads.
Joe, do you recommend that if you are single and you're looking at a recipe that serves 4, that you just package everything and put it in the freezer, or try to chop the recipe in half?
I mean, I really think it depends on what it is. You know, some things, you know, my books are full of recipes that I've scaled down for 1, but it makes a lot more sense in some cases to go ahead and make the bigger batch, you know, because it just, depending on the amount of time and prep, you don't really want to have all that work for something that results in just one meal. So it really depends on the recipe. But I really, you know, think that most of those recipes have to be rethought in a certain way and maybe even pulled apart a little bit so that you're getting more out of it without having to feel like you're eating the same thing all the time. I mean, that's one of my problems. It's one of my big obstacles when I was single, was just boredom with leftovers. Mm, you know, right. In the freezer, knowing what's in my freezer and fridge and pantry is difficult too. So shoving something into my bulging freezer without a label or without a date on it, as a way to tell myself that I was, you know, going to be able to use that later, but then forgetting what it was and not knowing until 6 months later, and I'm looking at some mysterious package and wondering, you know, what the heck is in there. So I think a lot of it, I really was glad to hear about Jenny's refrigerator dump, because I think that's a really great way to think about it. Every week to be going in and really trying to take stock and not just pushing things to the back of the fridge. I mean, that crisper drawer, I often think should be called the rotter, because that's what happens to most of the stuff that goes in there, right? And in some cases, I think that the fridge makers need to redesign these fridges. I mean, why is it that the things that last the longest we put in the most visible places on the door, whereas the things that spoil the quickest we shove out of the way into the drawers?
That's a great question.
That really doesn't make any sense.
Hmm. All right. Well, listen, we've got calls coming in at 888-477-9499. So let's go to Tom in Landenburg. Welcome to Radio Times, Tom.
Yes, hello. I'm a great fan of your show, and I just wanted to make a point to the kids' meal. We've been pretty religious about sit-down dinners with the moment that our children were introduced to solid food, and we're both working professionals, so we don't usually get through the door before 6:30. But the point is that everybody eats what comes to the table, and if you sort of tell a child that you don't like that, they probably will go with it. But if you alternatively just give them what you eat, then from the very early age, they will just get accustomed and they are willing to experiment. And I'm not saying that you're not going to have the apoplectic breakdown every once in a while. We still do have those. But I think being persistent and introducing them to all the variety of different home-cooked meals and freshly processed food is key, and hopefully will also address some of the
thanks, Tom.
Issues in the long run. So
I appreciate the call to Radio Times. You're breaking up a little bit, but the gist of the conversation, Jenny Rosenstock, is if you get them started early, then this becomes a part of the dinner table routine.
Yeah, and I also like what he said about just getting kids used to experimenting. And I will also add that part of it doesn't all have to happen at the dinner table. Just getting kids to be enthusiastic about food can happen anywhere. You know, we are big fans of taking kids to sort of the ethnic markets in our neighborhood to just have them, like, look in a, you know, just go to Kalustian's in in Midtown and just look at all the variety of like all these chutneys and all, you know, it's like traveling to another country, and it can be fun. And then when you pick that chutney up and then you serve it with the chickpeas, then it might not be as daunting. But also just going to restaurants and trying new, you know, different kinds of cuisines.
So Jenny, do you feel your kids are turning into foodies? Are
they
interested
turning into
in this?
Foodies. Unfortunately, they're not turning into cooks, which I have to work on next, because they love to eat, and one of them, you know, they have their weak spots. One of my older daughter still will not touch pasta, which is just amazing to me as the granddaughter of two 100% Italian grandmothers. But neither of them will eat eggs, so I have my weak links. But for the most part, I just want them to be the kinds of kids who are game for things, who are willing to try things, and I would say, for the most part, that has happened. So I'm happy with that. I think we still have a little ways to go, but the next frontier is really getting them to do this for themselves. They're old enough to you know, make a salad and throw things into the slow cooker if we have to do that, and so, you know, there's lots more to work on.
Speaking about the slow cooker, we've got a Facebook comment from Amy. She asks, what do your guests think about crockpot meals? The idea is appealing, but I find that the meals end up feeling mushy with too much flavor blending. Joe? And you work with vegetables, so
yeah.
It's probably even, do you even do crockpot cooking with vegetables?
Well, you know, I have to confess, and I mean, I know that there are a lot of slow cooker fans out there for very good reason. And there's a lot of things you can do in a slow cooker, but I really haven't done all that much. I tend to make beans in a slow cooker, which are, you know, slow cookers are a really great thing for cooking beans. But I agree that, you know, in the research that we've done about slow cookers and the pieces that I've edited about slow cookers, you know, there are definitely some tricks. And one is, you know, if you can saute your aromatic vegetables, your onion, garlic, celery, anything that you're doing at the base of a dish, if you can saute those before they go in, that can help. Slow cookers tend to retain a lot of liquid. So sometimes people even advocate opening the slow cooker and turning it up and cooking it down a little bit so that it's not watery. There are tricks like that. And there's a lot of really good slow cooker books out there. But I tend to use them for beans. I do love them for beans.
And Jenny, is a slow cooker part of your routine?
It is not. But I do hear from parents all the time that it saves them on a daily basis. So I am all for it. But my big complaint with the slow cooker is that all those things that Joe was describing, the browning and the aromatics, and that's to me cooking. And what I want out of a slow cooker, what everyone sold me on, was the idea of just you throw it all in and then press a button and it's done later. So I was shocked to sort of discover, and I'm a relatively new slow cooker owner. I don't use it that often, but I think I only bought one maybe a year or so ago. And I had a hard time finding recipes, you know, like our listener said, that really tasted great in them. You know, they were certainly fine, but I just felt like if I was going to have to add any energy to it, then I might as well just be cooking a meal. So
okay, call board's full, so let's get to some of our callers. Jessica in Brookhaven, Pennsylvania, you are live on Radio Times. Hello, Jessica.
Hi, thanks for having me. This might be regressing in the conversation a bit, but I love what Jenny said about making sure her kids are open to new meals, especially everybody has to try at least one bite and nobody can say anything against the cook. And I wanted to just add that in my family, we have what's called gratitude bites. And everyone is required to take as many bites as their age. So the 4-year-old has to take at least 4 gratitude bites.
Really?
To show the cook
I love that
someone made her meal. So we do gratitude bites in our house.
And that works for you, huh?
It works because they don't complain. They know if they take their gratitude bites while showing true gratitude, then they don't have to continue eating something that they don't like.
Okay, it's interesting. Jenny, what do you think?
I think that's great. I'd be curious to hear what the 16-year-old has to say about that.
Or the 40-year-old.
Thanks, Jessica, for the call to Radio Times. Let's go to South Jersey now and Samuel. Samuel, welcome. You there, Samuel? Okay, let's see if we can bring Tracy up. She's in Hopewell, New Jersey. Can we get to Tracy?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome.
I found that when my baby was born, there was a book out called Bringing Up Bebe, which talked about the French style of eating and the cooking fresh and everybody having family meals. And I would highly recommend that book for people because it really gives a different way of getting, you know, like different view on getting children to try new things. And it got me cooking my own baby food and everything. And now I find that I have a very good eater. My daughter will at least try anything that I put in front of her. Mm. And when I was working full time and I still wasn't like a very good cook, I discovered Real Simple magazine. And they had very good recipes in there that were quick to make. And it really got me a good start in, like, learning how to plan meals and go for the whole week and, like, the ways to buy things so sure. that I could use them up at different times. And I just wanted to you know, give that to everybody in case maybe they might get some inspiration from it as well.
Thanks, Tracy, for the call to Radio Times. And that brings us back to your point earlier in the show, Jenny. You used a number of different sources to get ideas, to get recipes, and also, too, it sounds like Tracy's starting her kids into the process at a young age.
Yes. I think all of what she said was really smart. And I do think that, you know, my ideas, I was a big, I was really into food, so it was easy for me to collect ideas. But I always tell people who aren't necessarily, you know, writing about food for a living, like me, that if you just pay attention to what your kid gets excited about outside of the house, we get so much inspiration from restaurants and, you know, it usually starts with what we order and then they pick something from our plate, and just trying to replicate that at home is one sort of easy way to bridge the gap. And the best example I can think of this is when they were little, and we did some takeout Chinese a few nights a week before we got our act together. And my daughter she wasn't a big eater, but she would just eat us all under the table with the chicken and broccoli. And so I came up with a chicken and broccoli recipe that was incredibly easy, you know, just a little hoisin and rice wine vinegar and chicken and broccoli, you know, steamed broccoli with maybe cashew nuts if you have them, or peanuts. And so she loves that, and we still make that all the time.
So,
it's a favorite.
So, Jenny, as we're wrapping up the show in about 30 seconds, what are the, reiterate for us the tips for getting quick meals on the table most nights of the week?
Keys to remember. I would say find 5 to 7 meals that every single person in the family will eat and post them inside your cabinet so that you don't have to think, what were the recipes that I, you know, for some reason we all, it's like tabula rasa every time we have to come up with dinner ideas. What was it? What did I think of? So just have those at the ready. Go shopping once a week. Get everything you need. Talk to your family in the beginning of the week to figure out when dinner can happen. It's probably not going to happen every night, but aim for that and you'll probably end up where you want to be.
And Joe, a thought or two to add to that as we wrap up?
Sure. Think ahead. Don't wait until you're hangry. You know,
I love that
and
word.
try to remember to relax and enjoy yourself too.
Joe Yonan, it was a pleasure having you on board for this edition
Thank
of Radio
you.
Times. Joe is food and dining editor for The Washington Post and author of Eat Your Vegetables, Bold Recipes for the Single Cook. And Jenny Rosenstock, great to have you here as well.
Thank you so much.
Jenny is founding editor of the blog Dinner, A Love Story, and the author of Dinner, The Playbook. And don't forget, you can find our Facebook page and podcasts at whyy.org/radiotimes. Our engineer today has been Kevin Griffin. Our producers are Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. Our intern is Diana Allen. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain on Radio Times. Thank you so much for joining us.